I want to find out what happened yesterday or Saturday on Glenn Youngkin's first day in office as the governor of Virginia. There's been a lot of press out there that Youngkin was a fake and that he was a controlled opposition and he wasn't going to keep any of his campaign promises and he was going to put pinko commies in charge of his education department and they were going to go full bore with critical race theory and this and that and the other. Something strange happened on the way to the rumor mill, though. Youngkin apparently is trying to keep campaign promises. So here to talk about this is our political affairs correspondent, Magdalene Rose, who lives in Virginia and has been covering this and following this since Youngkin announced his candidacy for governor last year. Magdalene, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I am well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good. So how was Youngkin's first day in office? How do you see it?
I think it was pretty good. He signed 11 executive orders that targeted keeping his promises on education and removing mask mandates. He also opened or directed an investigation into the incident in Loudoun County by directing the attorney general in that area. He worked to prevent human trafficking and support survivors in another executive order. And I think he truly was a very conservative governor on the first day. I don't really see any area to complain with. He led a prayer once he was sworn in or right before during that time period. There's been no indicator to me within his first actions as governor that he's anything other than a solid conservative. I think a lot of the criticism of him during that time period, the transition time period to governorship, may have been from the Trump team and from the Trump campaign and the diehard fans there who were very concerned that his win in Virginia, his style of campaigning might be the new style of campaigning for the Republican Party. And there was a bit of a power struggle there because the Trump team does not want the sort of quiet suburbanite way of campaigning to become a dominant factor because it would be very difficult for Trump to run again and win the nomination if that was the case. Because I'm not really seeing any reason why Youngkin should be a problem. In fact, he's being slammed in multiple liberal publications. Liberal reporters are out to get him. So if that's not an indicator for him keeping his conservative campaign promises, at least on day one, I don't know what is.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm maybe a little out of the loop on this. Why doesn't Trump want retail political campaigning?
Well, I don't think that he particularly wants anybody who could eclipse him in how the Republican Party should run. Glenn Youngkin ran a fantastic campaign in Virginia. He ran a campaign that was a coalition-building campaign with moderates, with very people on the very hard right, people who were in the suburban areas, suburban women. That's not the campaign that the Donald Trump people ran. They ran a base-driven campaign, which is fine, but that's the campaign they ran. I think there's been a little bit of fear from the people I've spoken to in the RNC and the GOP that if the path to victory in Virginia was a coalition campaign led by a guy who was very soft-spoken, who really only got passionate in positive ways and talking about his family or talking about, you know, education, that's not something the Trump world and the Trump style of campaigning can replicate. So I think there was a concern of an eclipse and perhaps a redirection of the Republican Party.
Well, so I have this from the Post-Millennial. Glenn Youngkin bans critical race theory, ends mask mandates in schools on the first day as Virginia governor. See if you can comment on this, Magdalene. One of the things that I heard him say in a clip that I listened to earlier today was he was telling the story about what happened in Loudoun County and the charges of sexual assault that were basically swept under the rug is not even a proper terminology. They, from the highest levels of power there, they were basically squashed. And I heard Youngkin say something to the effect of, look, we can't go forward with what's in the libraries and how we got there and then the policies on having boys and girls bathrooms until we know the truth about the incident that it has already caused. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, that's what he's been pushing, and he is directing the Attorney General, the new Republican Attorney General, Jason Meyers, to investigate it and to look into it, and that was something he discussed in the campaign, so he's keeping that promise. So he's keeping his promise on the social issues and the education front. He's also withdrawing Virginia from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative to protect businesses and ratepayers, so that he's covering his bases on education, on social issues, on economics, on the climate change issues, all the things conservatives care about. He is delivering on. He's removing vaccine mandates for all state employees. So he is really delivering, at least on the first day, at least within his power with executive orders, in giving all the things he campaigned on giving. So the criticism of him, I do think, was unfounded, and I think it was driven by infighting within the Republican Party rather than indicators he was a bad guy.
Now, Magdalene Rose, our political affairs correspondent on our Dude Maker hotline here with us. All right, so we know what's happened on day one with the governor. Now, for the first time in many, many moons, state of the Commonwealth of Virginia, because it is a Commonwealth, Commonwealth Virginia will have a Republican majority in the House of Delegates and a Republican majority in the Senate. Any word on what they may be up to when they convene their session, and when is that? Is it in spring? When will they go into session?
I believe it's in spring. Everyone's being very tight-lipped about what's going to happen when that happens. The only thing I've heard is that there's not going to be any more gun control, that initiative, that focus that was under Northam that never ended. And make no mistake, Virginia was constantly under siege with restrictions on the Second Amendment that Governor Northam was trying to pass.
Right.
And the word is that that's going to stop, that Glenn Youngkin has no interest in it and will not support it. And Republican majorities will not focus on it. And our new Attorney General, Jason Meyers, does not want it. So that's really the only thing I've heard. I think there's going to be a focus on economics. We have some economic issues in Virginia, a focus on maybe repealing a lot of the climate change efforts that Governor Northam put in that are job killers here. There really seems to be a focus on improving Virginia as a whole. But in terms of what the big legislative goal is going to be for Republicans, that's not out yet.
All right. Let's switch gears here for a moment then, and let's talk about Trump. So Trump goes to Florence, Arizona on Saturday and gives a very recognizable, very 2015, 2016 Trump against the machine speech. But he does something different this time. He comes out against any vaccinations and vaccination campaigns. Surprisingly, he had never done this before. For children. The populist streak, now look, that's what most people these days, especially after they learn the news and the truth, want to hear. So it seems to me that I didn't watch the whole rally. I saw maybe 6 minutes of it this morning. Seems to me that if this is a preview and if he does take on Biden or Hillary, whoever it will be, it won't be Biden, whoever it would be in 2024, seems to me that Trump has gone directly back to the populist well. How do you see it?
I don't think it's particularly the populist well. I think it's appealing to the base. What bothers me about where the Trump campaign is right now is that 2016 was a masterful work of art in terms of political strategy. A lot of the campaign style came from European politics. It came from, like you said, a populist way of being, a populist policy platform. It came from a nationalist idea of how America should function. People think that 2016 was sort of just him saying whatever he wanted, and you and I know it wasn't. He had real issues he campaigned on. His surrogates were on point. It was a work of art. And in 2020, it wasn't. He just sort of talked about the things he'd done a little bit and campaigned a lot. So I don't know if he's returning to that. I don't see indicators of him returning to crafting the type of artful work that he did in 2016. What I do think he has realized is that the vaccine mandates are not something that his base likes.
Nope.
They're not something sane people like. It
nope.
doesn't make any sense to the United States. And I think he's realized that going on stage with Bill O'Reilly and saying, you know, all these great things about vaccines. Yeah, it's his right to do that as an American. Fine. But if he wants to be president again, his base doesn't like that. His base is not going to support that. And enough people around him maybe have told him that and explained to him that even if he's super proud of the vaccine, go ahead, be super proud of the vaccine if you want. That's not something his base is super proud of. And they're not super happy when he goes on Bill O'Reilly's speaking tour and pushes it everywhere. So I don't know if it's a return to populism, but it's a return to prioritizing the interests of your base over everything else, which is something he did do a lot in 2020.
All right, you're the smartest 23-year-old I know, so let me put you on the spot. You're looking at this today. Is he all in for 2024?
No. I don't think
so. Gina, you and I agree on I completely agree. I'm surprised that you said that. So you and I are the outliers here because he's practicing for 20. I don't think that he is, actually.
No, I don't think he is at all. I think a Trump will run. I think it might be Don Jr. It could be Eric Trump. I don't think it'll be the girls. Definitely not Tiffany. But I think it could be Eric or Don Jr. Probably Don Jr. more so. But I don't think he is all in. 2020 was a disaster for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons it was a disaster was because he had people running his campaign and he had people on the surrogate team, the strategy team, who were just grifters and had no real idea what they were doing whatsoever. So we went from 2016 where we had European strategists and we had a group of Pat Buchanan people and we had some Ronald Reagan people and we had some Nixon strategists and Roger Stone, people who really were masterful, and especially people who had spent a lifetime losing to the Clintons and knew how to then beat the Clintons. That was a big thing. You wouldn't realize how many Republicans have been battling the Clintons for 20 years, were working for Trump to make sure he beat Hillary Clinton. So he doesn't have any of that now. He still has these strange sycophants to tell him whatever he wants to hear. So I don't think it will be him. Maybe it will be, but I don't think that will happen. And I don't think Ron DeSantis will be his vice president, because Ron DeSantis, if he won, and if Trump is not running, could win that nomination and become president. I do believe that. So I don't think you'll see that, but you may see Don Jr. run, and you may see Eric run.
All right, there is there are several Senate races out there. I'm not really following federal politics because I don't care. I don't think that there is anything to be gained by them any longer here, which is why I'm more interested in what's happening in Virginia and in Virginia politics and in Florida politics and Texas politics and Louisiana. You know where I'm coming from, because you and I have talked about this. However, and this is interesting, there's a young woman that's running for the Senate in the state of Alabama. Mr. Barrett and I started seeing her billboards yesterday. Her name is Katie Britt. And really, who in the hell is Katie Britt? And I don't know. But she's running for the U.S. Senate. There seems to be this trend here. You have Kristen Sinema now, who has basically come out and told regime leader Biden, I'm not doing what you want. It's a stupid idea, and I won't do it. Joe Manchin has told Biden and told Schumer, you're not making me the asterisk in the history book who voted to end the filibuster that preceded the new South Carolina-based secessions of 2022. So the Senate, it seems to me, is, if nothing else, if you're a political watcher, could be a fun fall coming up. Any races that interest you more than others?
Well, I think that there's going to be races in Ohio that are going to be a big deal. I think you may see some challenges in the Midwest. To me, we don't have a fantastic crop of Senate candidates yet. I haven't really seen anyone who I'm like, oh, yeah, that's going to be fantastic. It doesn't seem like that's really where the focus of the Republican Party is. I think there's more of a focus in the House. There's been a lot of recruitment of female candidates in the House for Republican seats. There's a focus on getting rid of Republicans who are in pretty Republican-safe seats who are not as hard right as we'd like. Like, there's Joe Kent in Washington State, who they want to have in to push out the moderate, I think she's really a rhino, who's currently in that seat. In terms of the Senate, there's going to be a big fight in Ohio, though, because...
So this is J.D. Vance in the primary. Yeah. It's going to be J.D. Vance versus...
Josh Mandel and a couple other people. That's going to be a nasty fight. The thing that I caution people about with J.D. Vance is that he was somebody who was, like, documented to be not pro-Trump. And you don't have to be pro-Trump. And I'm not somebody who's like, oh, you have to be pro-Trump all the time. But he now is, like, running on being pro-Trump. That's, like, his whole message. So he was very pro-Trump. And then it wasn't very pro-Trump, rather. And then he became that. And then he started doing all these Fox News hits. To me, he almost looks like someone created by Fox News to appeal to the hard right, to appeal to the Trump base, but he isn't really. So that's going to go on in Ohio. But I would really focus a lot more on the House seats, because we're definitely going to retake the House. But who we retake the House with matters, because if we retake it with moderates, we're not going to get anything done. But if we retake it with serious conservatives, we may actually get things we want and legislation that Republicans want, because Republicans haven't had new legislation they've led on other than like criminal justice reform and tax cuts in a very long time.
Well, those are just that's just stupid boilerplate crap. It's bumper stickers that they think people want to hear. I want to go back to J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy. Yeah. Fake conservatives like Rod Dreher are all over Vance as this new prophet from the cultural backwoods. And somebody who was familiar with the land and the issues therein. Almost kind of like a Glenn Youngkin, because Youngkin did, and I can bear witness to this, he did reach out to rural voters. You and I talked about this. He may have been the first major candidate that actually campaigned in rural Virginia on farming issues and talked to farmers. Is there something, though, going on here? Because Vance is popular. He's in the thick of this thing. I actually am interested to see if Ohioans want someone that is, I'll boil it down to something simple, is a guy that is of the land. What do you think?
There is, except people hate that book that he wrote in rural America.
I never read it, so I can't
say. They find it extremely insulting. And, like, I just Googled it. They did a movie about it, and the budget was, like, $45 million, and it made $38,502 for box office. So, like, I don't particularly know if anybody in rural America liked him. I think it's kind of this idea that's been fed through conservative media that he is loved by them. From what I know of Hillbilly book, it's not particularly positive in showing working class Americans and showing rural Americans. So if Rob Portman is the senator retiring in Ohio, he is a pretty like quiet guy. He's very smart, but he has not been someone to like, you know, the conservative movement on fire. He's just been sort of like a dependable Republican in a lot of ways. I don't think the people of Ohio particularly want that Senate seat used to launch a political career in the way J.D. Vance wants. J.D. Vance is also a CNN contributor. So in 2017, like, he is not particularly of the people in the way that maybe like Bill Clinton was when he was running for president in the beginning, where he could really market himself as like a down-home good boy from the South. I don't see that. Especially because everyone hates that book that I know. So I don't particularly see that as a possibility going forward with rural America and J.D. Vance. Glenn Youngkin, yes. But Glenn Youngkin also, like, didn't defame rural America in a memoir. So I see a difference there.
Okay, so there's one more thing that's going on in Ohio here that I think will be informative of kind of taking the pulse of real America. The people that you were talking about that boo Trump at Bill O'Reilly events when he starts talking about the vaccine, that are trying to get back to the land, that don't want GMO food, that are rejecting this crap that's being shoved down their throat from the Biden regime and electric cars and just every other fantasy that these elite libtard losers, because they think they're cool, want the rest of us to think that they're cool. And even if we don't, they want to force us into this. Mike DeWine was one of the first out the gun with the most pernicious and vicious lockdowns in all of the United States. Mm-hmm. And he stayed with it. He stayed with it long beyond when he should have. So this actually could be a referendum. I don't know who's running against DeWine, but I would like to see DeWine lose 22-78 to whoever's challenging him in the primary. Any insight on that?
Well, I can say that now he's coming out saying he opposes critical race theory and he's trying to become more of a conservative in that vein. So he is aware of the fact that people are not happy with him in terms of mandates, in terms of lockdowns and everything. He's saying he opposes legalizing marijuana now. So he's trying to go towards the more conservative wing on social issues. He signed one of the pro-life bills coming down that came down a couple weeks ago. So he is trying to switch sides a little bit, but this is going to be a thing that Republican voters have to decide coming up in the next two elections. Are you going to vote heavily against governors who are Republicans, who you like and agree with on abortion, on against marijuana, on critical race theory, on economics, and all these issues, but yet they were pro-mandates and pro-lockdown? This is going to be the divide amongst these people. Are you still going to support your Republicans who you agree with on everything, you know, gun control and everything, but who you disagree with on lockdowns? Because there are quite a few Republican governors who could be in trouble for pushing the lockdowns. I don't think we're going to see as many of them lose races as we might think now. Because when the campaign trail starts, yes, there's going to be a discussion of lockdowns, but they may just say, well, you know, we're at the end of COVID, we're not going to do it anymore. And they're going to start, you're going to start to hear things like, well, I'm pro-life, and, you know, I'm a Christian, and I'm against the climate change craziness, and I'm pro-gun. You may see them run away from COVID.
I see that.
That happens,
you know what, though, Magdalene?
If you're a Republican, I'd vote.
I say, no mercy. Nope, not forgiving you. Don't trust you. You're a liar. Get out of my way. I tell you something else about the DeWines of the world here. If they did it once, they'll do it again.
Right.
Joe Blystone, for example, is one of the guys that's running against DeWine. To me, this is, and there are several others. This is, and could be, in these other states. This, if there are governors that are up for re-election that were lockdown advocates, the lockdowns have been a demonstrable failure. The people of Ohio have to know. I know a guy, a friend of mine, he's a listener to the channel, he's a crusader, been around for a long time. He worked for a food services company, it was based in Kentucky, but did most of its business in Ohio. I saw him Saturday night, I said, Randy, what was the damage from DeWine? He said, 50% of restaurant accounts that were open in winter of 2019, going into 2020, 50% of them are gone. I said, any recovery? He said, small recovery, but the damage is long lasting. The people of Ohio cannot be expected. I don't expect them to forget that, or to forget the damage that a clown like Wolf did in Pennsylvania, or any of these other morons, these tyrants that went along with this. So to me, DeWine is a barometer of sorts.
He is, but I think one of the issues is going to be whether or not the Republicans who are running against these guys who were pro-lockdown, who are in vaccine mandates and everything, whether or not they're truly electable statewide.
Good point.
So in Pennsylvania, you know, you may have a Republican challenger who is right in people's minds against the lockdowns and against mask mandates and vaccine mandates.
Magdalene, we're going to have to, hang on a second, we're going to have to leave it there. Hold on just a second here, folks. We're going to come right back here on the Crusade Channel. Thanks to Magdalene Rose for being our special guest, the last live radio station stand.
Vaccine mandate.
Magdalene, we're going to have to, hang on a second, we're going to have to leave it there. Hold on just a second here, folks. We're going to come right back here on the Crusade Channel. Thanks to Magdalene Rose for being our special guest, the last live radio station stand.